All right, and for those of you who do not know what we will be talking about tonight, tonight's subject, we're going to be talking about the Nephilim Mothers. Our guest tonight is Douglas Riggs, and he has brought two guests, from what I'm told. He has two women who claim to have given birth to modern-day Nephilim. Some people say the phenomenon is not real, but these women say different. So tonight we're going to be talking to them and getting their testimony. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and bring on Doug so we can start this interview that I've been looking forward to all week. Doug, are you on the line with us?
Yes, Dante. Thanks for having us on. It's good to talk with you again.
Oh, thank you for coming. I definitely appreciate it. This is something I've been wanting to do for a while since the first time I had you on the show, so I'm definitely glad you could make it.
Well, and we have Sally with us and also Constantina, who have come out of a history of ritual abuse. It has nothing really to do with the alien abduction phenomenon. It's strictly that which is connected with royal families whose goal and agenda is to bring in a new world order and bring in their Christ.
All right. So let me make sure I have this straight. Sally was involved with the Nephilim, and Constantina was involved with the royal families.
Well, they both are. They're both royal families. Sally has a Jewish father, and her mother was Queen Frederica. And Constantina comes from a royal family in Egypt, in the UK, and in Germany and those areas. But both of them come out of that background and that history. And I think they're just selected because the agenda was for this generation to bring in the hybrids, which is, I believe, is a major central focus of the days of Noah returning in our own generation.
And I definitely agree with you. So my first question out the gate to you is, how did you first come in contact with these women?
Well, years ago, I started our fellowship in the early 80s, and of course Sally was with us from the beginning, and we were just a Bible church, basically, Dante, and just teaching the Word, and as we were seeking to grow in the Lord, we noticed that there were definite hindrances and obstructions that represented different bondages. We didn't really know the background of Sally at the time, and there were a number of others. I didn't meet Connie until about 1997 as my work became more known, and I was traveling throughout different regions of the United States, and she was in Montana at the time. But Sally's been with us from the beginning, and then I met Connie, as I mentioned, in 1997, and I traveled to Eureka, where she lived, several times, and she came to stay with us on several occasions just to do the work of dealing with all the trauma and the dividedness, and so she's now here with her husband. They've been here for 3 years now, so they're just great ladies, and they first of all love the Lord, and they were targeted by the enemy. That wasn't their choice due to the families they were born into, and so they've come a long ways from the tremendous bondage and trauma that this kind of phenomenon represents, Dante.
All right, and let me, before we continue, let me let everybody in the chat room know that you can feel free to post your questions in the chat room. We will not be taking any calls tonight because we do want to get through the interview. So again, if you have questions, feel free to post them in the chat room. I also have Facebook open. So if anybody has Facebook, you can send me an instant message on there. All right, but let's really start from the beginning. How were they chosen? What made them particular targets for the enemy in this program that they had going on?
Well, I'll just let them speak for themselves. What are your thoughts about, why do you think you were chosen? I guess there's the enemy side of this, but then there's ultimately God's permission in all this. So who wants to go first? Okay. Connie points to Sally. Okay, go ahead, Sally.
Hi, Dante. This is Sally. I like to take things from God's perspective because I don't like to give too much credit to the enemy because he likes to take the credit and the glory anyway. And so I first and foremost give it the glory to God, because he's the one that actually chose me from the foundation of the world to be his daughter. And I think because of that, then I was marked by the enemy. I believe that God never does anything apart from a person's permission, because he's a total gentleman. And so it's not really a memory or anything, but I was just really impressed that there was a permission, that I was in full agreement, that I was willing to have my life for the glory of God. And so it's not like he asked me to give birth to a Nephilim, but yet the permission was that I want to have him first and foremost be glorified throughout eternity, and secondly, to overthrow his enemy. So with that became a privilege, in a sense, to be born into a multi-generational family who, like the birth of Jesus Christ, they, through that genealogy, came a pure, not so much, became our Lord Jesus. So likewise, Satan had to have his man, and he wants his people. And so I came forth through bloodlines, through multi-generational praying for this age, for these Nephilim, per se, or for that Satan would have his people populated on this earth.
Yeah, maybe I just, because I think what Donnie is also looking for, and I appreciate that, is that when you're born into a particular family, the family has an agenda. Their agenda and their mindset is completely different from, you know, just the average person, and especially the Christian. And they have a belief system that believes that this world can only be saved by bringing in their Savior, and there's the accompanying prophet. Sally gave birth to that which represents a false prophet, and only history will determine whether he's the one, but the investment has been very, very, very great. Likewise with Constantina, or Connie, she had no choice, of course, which family she'd be born into, but because her family, her father being King George the VI, is as outlandish as that may sound to some, it's just the fact. It's just the way it is. These heads of the royal families, or the kings of the earth, if you will, using a biblical framework, in order for them to have power, they have to give their offspring over to the adversary if they're going to have power, if they're going to have money, if they're going to have prestige. And, of course, what the adversary wanted, he wanted females for this generation to be able to produce hybrids, and ultimately through a process of elimination to create two ultimate hybrids. One would be the Antichrist and the false prophet. There are, of course, more out there. I mean, Connie is now remembers conceiving 13. Sally, one, as it relates to being a in the category of a false prophet, or Connie was created to bring forth that which represents a representation of Antichrist, being Nimrod, Apollyon, Alexander. So the enemy's goal is to create an army, and the quintessential, or the avant-garde of that army, will be these hybrids. It will be much more than that. It'll be the super soldiers, as Russ Dizdar has talked about, but those are humans. Those are expendable. They're programmed to assassinate and carry out various destructive roles to break, you know, tear down the infrastructure. But those entities that are hybrids, they're highly placed, and they're designed to ultimately replace mankind in order for Satan's final attempt to overthrow God in the Battle of Armageddon. So I don't know if that answers your question. How about you, Connie? Do you have any thoughts?
Were you done, Sally? Well, for me, you know, I'm just, okay, it's not like I think that because, okay, let me back up, because my origin and source would be in the O'Collins, which is a very ancient Druidic bloodline, which goes all the way back to Nimrod. And so I was born into that line in 1949, which was right at the close of World War II. So they were beginning to set the stage for bringing the scientists and so forth into other countries. And so I could say happened, although I believe God was in control of all of that. I happened to be born at that time into that particular bloodline. And so they had a very specific goal for the person that would be born out of that whole project that they were putting in place at my conception to create a new opening of a portal. So that's in a very much of a just that's just a very brief beginning explanation of my beginning.
Yeah, when she mentioned the O'Collins, the O'Collins can be traced back 4,500 years, and as the oldest Druidic bloodline. And when we say Druidic, it would embody the religious ideals of the old Babylonian Empire.
Yeah, and the oracles, they hand down the ancient oracles. You know, they pass them on through memorization, and they have a lot of ancient instruments that have been passed down thousands of years that are still in existence today. So that's kind of the bloodline I was brought into. And so because of the time in history, they were looking to begin to move into a new stage of development of an enhanced human being. So like, you know, in Nazi Germany, where they were doing all the experiments like Mengele on these people for the Aryan race. Well, it wasn't just about an Aryan race. That was only part of it. They were actually looking for an enhanced race. So they're going to start, you know, working with like manipulating DNA and gene splicing and all that kind of stuff. So I was kind of laid in on the foundation of that, you know, just the seed of the woman and the man. They come together, and I'm the product of that. So.
Yeah. And I think it's really important just to throw this in, Dante, so that the listeners can see something of the significance. If anyone has heard of Dr. Josef Mengele, the angel of death, a Nazi doctor, both of these ladies and the ladies here have spent a lot of time with him. He was paid by their fathers, who are members of the royal family. Mengele was the one that did the trauma-based mind control on a lot of these women, including these two that are here. That was also in consort with Dr. John Bowlby, who is the attachment theorist, and you can look him up, Bowlby. These are the Nazi-type doctors that were responsible to create the programming and to create the structuring so that the powers of darkness that would interface these ladies through trauma-based mind control would go through a transformation process. So ultimately, by the age of 13, they would have the capacity to conceive and give birth to hybrids. So they had to have a particular bloodline that represented a certain level of iniquity that reaches all the way back to the beginning of mankind, a pure bloodline from their standpoint. And then with the interfacing with the powers of darkness, then the technology, if you will, of these fallen entities, this is the generation that God has allowed this phenomenon to finally surface again for the third time in history.
Now, that's very interesting, and we actually, during the course of this, Patty in the chat room asked a very interesting question based off of Sally's response, and I'm going to expand it to include Connie. Were any of the families into Satanism, or was there some other kind of ritual worship going on in the background?
We call it satanic ritual abuse, but from the standpoint of your family and your family, how do they view their religious ideological beliefs? How would you frame that? Go ahead.
They're Luciferian and very, very, very religious, but deny Jesus Christ as the Son of God. So these types of activities is usually cloaked with religion, with a religious activity, a very pious front, you know, like the Pope. A lot of religious heads will cover up their activities. It seems like the more religious externally, then I get suspicious that there's something that's a cover-up. And then Connie can speak to her family.
Well, on the outside, as far as the family I was placed with, that was Mennonite. My surrogate father was a Mennonite pastor, so very religious. But as far as my actual family on the baseline, that was totally Druidic. I mean, I grew up in my secret world, you know, learning all about the Druidic culture, incantations, healing powers, programming, you know, all of that was passed down. But as a Mennonite girl, I didn't know about that. But in my secret world, that's what was going on.
Yeah, well, let me just throw something in here, too. When it comes to your fathers, how would they use you for their own enhancement and their own position in terms of world leaders and world powers? How did they involve you in other world leaders and major international events on an occult level? Go ahead.
Well, my father was killed at when I was 18 months old. He was ritually sacrificed, and he was one of the heads of the Jewish state. And so at that point, he really believed in wholeheartedly in what he was doing in preparing he knew who I was as being a daughter, his progeny, to bring forth the prophet, which the Jewish people believe that's you know, their whole rituals and everything through the Kabbalah. So he, in one sense, on one side, knew that he'd be ritually sacrificed, but on the other sense, on the other side, he was taken out as a blood seal.
Yeah, I think, too, and the girls are a little bit nervous, I can tell. But so I'm trying to help get them loosened up here a little bit. But how central would you say Jerusalem is to the whole center of activities that have gone on throughout your life in terms of the meeting with world leaders? Maybe you could just talk a little bit about how you were used to interface with world leaders in this whole agenda to bring in Antichrist. Go ahead.
I'm just trying. I can't right now.
Okay.
Well, Jerusalem is
the hub.
It is definitely the hub. If we look at scriptures, it's the apple of God's eye, right?
Yeah.
And so anything that has the first priority and importance to God, then Satan has his throne there. And so that's where I believe right now that there has been the throne of the Nephilim, my Nephilim son, and his counterpart. They have a throne that is today is in Jerusalem.
It was. It's right under the Temple Mount is what has been reported to us consistently.
But as far as the world leaders, my father died. My birth father died when I was three. But before, actually at birth, he handed me over to another world leader who still is alive, and all the important functions, they always bring in the key world leaders and the heads, like, of the religions, you know, the Jewish religion, the Buddhist, they like to have all of them there when they do, like, real significant rituals. And it's to empower the nations. It's about putting a spiritual veil over the nations. But for the world leaders, they see it as prestige, you know, like to be the to be these heads that are have these this power put over on them, that they get the technology, they have spiritual enhancement to be able to see and know the future. There's monetary value, there's scientific value. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, that's good. I mean, I have a lot of things I could lead with, but I want to make sure, Dante, that you're free to continue on with what you had in mind.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, oh,
sure.
Okay. Excuse me. I got a frog in my throat. I'm Dory.
Oh, hi, Dory.
And I'm Dante's every other week co-host.
Okay.
I recently learned, well, at least a point of view I recently learned that I had never heard of before. I was reading a book by Malachi Martin, and they believed, meaning that Catholics believed that Lucifer and Satan are two different entities. I won't say people, two different entities. Is that what these girls' families believe too?
No, I know I've known both of these for a long time. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but our understanding is totally a Christian standpoint. I mean, in other words, I've been a pastor for many, many years and teaching the word. The Luciferians see our enemy, Satan, as Lucifer. Lucifer
okay.
ceased to be Lucifer when he rebelled against God and was thrown out of heaven. That was before man was created, Dory.
Right,
And so the Luciferians, they say, well, the Christians refer to him as Lucifer, as Satan. We don't recognize that. We see and we worship and recognize him as the light bearer. So
yeah.
Lucifer doesn't even exist anymore as Lucifer. He's only Satan. He's only Lucifer to those who have rejected our Lord Jesus Christ and are the enemies of God.
Okay, wow. That makes so much sense. Thank you.
Sure.
All right, let me ask this, because we really want to flush out the background here. We talked about how you were, I guess, chosen to fulfill your purpose. At what age were you introduced into the program, and is there any significance to the age at which you were chosen to start in the program?
Well, I was conceived into the project.
Yeah, actually, it's a multi-generational. We're chosen by our forefathers, just like Jesus Christ was David's seed. It's the same thing. We were the seed of our forefathers. Connie goes back to the O'Collins, and mine goes way back to the tribe of Levi, the different tribes of from Israel.
Yeah, I think another way to think about this, Dante, is the adversary, of course, is not omniscient. That's only an attribute of God. But he is able to see further into the future than we can. I mean, we can see, we don't even see in the future. The way to think about this is that if you're on a flat plane of the earth, you can only see about 11 miles before you go off the horizon. But if you're in an airplane or if you're in the space shuttle or the space station, you look down on Earth, you can see for thousands of miles, which is off the horizon for us. So the vantage point of the angelic beings, just because by nature of their creation, we know this from Daniel, which I won't go into, but the enemy is he has a pre-planned agenda, and he is, as the prince of power of the air, he knows his assets, and there are certain families who have been given over to evil, and the more given over to evil that certain families have been involved with, without any Christian lineage, the generational iniquity builds in power. In other words, iniquity has an accumulative effect. You know, like it says in Exodus 20, the iniquity of the fathers are passed on to the children of the third and fourth generation. Okay? So the most pure bloodline would be those that would have no Christian heritage. Okay? So when these people accumulatively have generational sin, The daughters are, especially for this generation, are selected out of these royal bloodlines to be the breeders, if you will. And so the plan is of course, ultimately, for the final war between God and Satan, as we see in Revelation 16, Revelation 17, Revelation 19:19, Satan has to plan ahead. He doesn't know the exact time, but he gathers his assets, and so this generation he's been released. I don't have any evidence in terms of church history, Dante, that there was any breeding project or program going on until this generation, until after World War II. And I don't know that the adversary had the technology or there were, but I think it was really in the sovereignty of God he was not allowed. This is all in conjunction with the birth of the nation Israel. All of this is tied in with the birth of the nation Israel. This is really when this project was released. I believe this is where when we talk about conception, these people now, when we talk about reverse engineering, when we go back, we know this because of Daniel 2:22. God reveals profound and hidden things, and we know from the function of the what's called neshama, the breath of life, that according to Genesis 2:7 and in the book of Job, that it's the neshama that gives understanding. In Proverbs 20, verse 27, it's the spirit that is the neshama, that is the lamp of Yahweh in it, searching all the innermost parts of man's being. So as we've worked through the years and learned, it was very slow. I mean, we heard about the Nephilim, these women giving birth to Nephilim back in the 80s, Dante and Dory, but we didn't do anything with it because our desire was just to see the people healed from all the trauma that they've gone through and the creation of dissociative identity disorder. So our goal was not to even pursue any of this, in terms of its theological implications worldwide. Our goal is to see healing. But from the enemy's standpoint, the bloodline is really important to them. And so the conception, there are conception rituals, and we know this through not only collaborative testimony. I remember hearing a program one time, Russ was talking about conception ritual, and of course our ladies have all talked about this. And it's the knowledge is given through by God Himself, so that they can know what they need to know to go free. And so there are specific rituals planned. Pre-planned so that at the very conception of those that are selected to be a Nephilim mother, the conception takes place, we now know, as of the last couple of years, on Mount Hermon. That was a portal that I believe was opened up through a massive ritual that occurred in World War II. The sacrifice of over 6 million Jews opened this portal, which had been closed, and allowed the phenomenon that we have today, as it was in the days of Noah, the return of the Nephilim for the third and final time. And so these conception rituals are created in a supernatural atmosphere. I don't know if you're familiar with the Nazi bell, but that technology that was taken out of Germany, Hans Hummler took it to Argentina. It was not captured by the U.S. government or the Soviets. It was taken to Argentina, where they have the capacity to build UFOs, as they're called today. They're not; they're terrestrial-based flying machines. But a part of that Nazi Bell project was to when the conception occurred, there is something that takes place on a spiritual level, so that genetically in the DNA there is, and I don't know how to describe it, but there's something that rides piggyback to the person's DNA. It's like what some people refer to as a triple helix. You cannot see it, but it's functioning in such a way so that starting right at conception, these women are prepared to conceive and give birth to Nephilim. Okay, so the conception, of course, occurs with specific families that have been chosen. Specific the human fathers and the human mothers, they have to be of royal bloodline. So these women and the people we're working with, Dante, they didn't go into the occult. They were born into it. They didn't have to go to rituals to receive supernatural powers. They were born with supernatural powers. dabblers can go into the occult, and Satanists can go into going into some type of satanic cult in order to get power. These women and the people that we're talking about were born with it. They didn't have to go to any rituals to obtain it.
All right, and that is very intriguing, and I do have a bunch of questions. But before we get there, I have one more question pertaining to the family's religion. Now, we talked about them being Luciferian and Druidic. Did they outright deny a belief in God, or did they believe in God and just wanted to choose the other side?
Well, for my family, we're talking about a Druidic religion that was passed down for thousands of generations. It was, there may have been, I can't speak for my father, if outwardly he may have gone to some sort of church type thing, but I mean, he was a practicing Druid in every aspect of his being. I mean, he knew the rules, he knew the language, no, he wasn't a Christian.
But did they believe in God, the God we believe in? Did they acknowledge the God we believe in?
No, I don't believe he did.
Okay. How about you, Sal?
Yeah, I would concur that there the worship of Lucifer, and with the Kabbalah has a different take. It's a worship of, very much in the Old Testament. I think externally, though, there is a worship of God, but in reality, it is actually a worship of Lucifer,
yeah.
And wanting to have Lucifer's man, which is the Antichrist and the prophet. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for their man, their one new man, and their project.
His counterpart.
Right, and I think what we'll probably get into later is in exchange for women, men are looking to rule and reign over this world. And so we have the high political leaders, we have the high religious leaders. My family was of that. And they ran in that league of the high Luciferian controlling the world government. In exchange for that power, then they would give the daughters over to the principalities in order to populate this earth with Nephilim, which that Satan's plan, or Lucifer's plan, of course, doesn't tell the men really what their plan is, but their plan is really to destroy man. And so that, just like in the days of Noah, that was Satan's plan at that point, is to contaminate and to destroy man so much that God would not have his man, which was Jesus Christ, on the throne. And it's about this the same type of scenario. There's nothing new under the sun. It's just now really the emphasis is about the church. And so Satan is trying to thwart his God's purpose in the church being with Jesus Christ. And so
without spot or wrinkle.
Without spot or wrinkle.
Yeah.
Right, right. And so that's the primary thrust. And so by understanding what God's plan is for mankind, then Satan has his counterfeit plan. And my family was of that counterfeit plan, but they're so deceived that they didn't ultimately know that God had a higher plan, who Jesus Christ was. And that Satan was actually a creature. So that's the deception.
Yeah. And I think, too, to address your question, Dante, is that the Christ that these Luciferians believe in is the Merovingian Christ, the Gnostic Christ of the Da Vinci Code. It is that Christ. It is a Gnostic Jesus that is not the Jesus of Christ of Nazareth. They believe in a Christ, and who is the last descendant of Aeneas, if you will. If you look at the Roman emperors, especially with Charlemagne, all the members, the heads of the royal family, had to trace their lineage at least back to Charlemagne if they were to qualify to be able to have a royal pedigree. And so through interbreeding, they've kept this pedigree pure. And preceding Charlemagne, you go back to the Merovingian kings, the Frankish kings, their whole goal was to bring forth a final Roman emperor. I mean, this is written in a book by a secular historian, Marie Tanner, called The Last Descent of Aeneas. She gives the ideology of the royal families and their desire to bring forth a final Roman emperor. And they see him as the Christ. And so, their ideology is completely different. I mean, they wouldn't call him Antichrist. They would call him the Christ. So that's what they believe. It's the Gnostic Christ.
And that right there is very interesting, and we're going to come back to that. Earlier, you mentioned the conception ritual. Can you explain what that is for everybody, including myself, that doesn't know?
Well, I'm going to summarize. You girls can follow up if I miss anything on this. I'm summarizing for some of the people that can't be here and some of the others that are not a part of this assembly that I've worked with that have this background. This is our understanding that is accumulated. When you bring two people together in order to create for the conception event of that which has been pre-planned to bring a female into the world that would have the capacity to conceive and give birth to a hybrid. They first of all have to have the bloodline, like I mentioned, but there are rituals that precede this. These are massive rituals. They're synchronized rituals from around the world, from specific holy sites, if you will. There will be rituals that will be coordinated and released, and then there's the convergence of power. So that right at the moment of conception, where these people was right there on Mount Hermon, there's the release of this power. So that when conception occurs, there is an interaction, an interfacing with the powers of darkness. So that there is an overlay, a lamination in some way that I cannot explain. But it so affects the DNA. That person, when age 13, they will be able to conceive a hybrid. It is supernatural technology, but there's preparation, and the conception ritual is a very massive thing in terms of the release of power through human sacrifice.
And like in my case, they would have had the 10 kings of the earth there, and then there were all representations of the. All the major world religions. They have them there at that event because they're invested in being a part of that power. So it's not just an isolated, a couple coming together. It's very orchestrated, bringing them together. And then there were like my case, there were like 500,000 worldwide. It wasn't just like there, but ritual sacrifices that went on that night.
You know, when you say, okay, how do you know this? Again, if those that are interested, they're welcome to, I can send them a paper on the function of a person's human spirit, the function of that which is referred to as Neshama, the breath of life, that has attributes. The average everyday person doesn't need to know these kinds of things, but when the whole reason why this has come forth is in terms of understanding these kinds of things, these level of rituals, is that God is revealing the darkness. I mean, when we talk about, if we go back to South America, I remember seeing a History Channel documentary a while back on the history of human sacrifice. I'll never forget this. It was in the, I think it was in the Aztec culture. They showed all these skulls that were in racks, and in they talked about a ritual where over 100,000 sacrifices occurred. Okay, and so that's in history. And so when we talk about something at this level, we're talking about a level of human sacrifice that is necessary. In order for the powers of darkness, portals to be opened, in order for this capacity to conceive a Nephilim to even occur, because it's contrary to nature. I mean, it's so contrary to God's way in which he created us. Satan has to create an override. And so I just see that these massive rituals is a way that he overrides. It's the release of satanic power on such a level that this capacity is given at the conception. So that at age 13, that's when the conception of Nephilim occur with all these women, that can occur. And it's a direct spirit. It is a conception between a fallen angel and a woman, just exactly like we see in Genesis 6. It's no different, except that we're in the final generation, and now we have, where in Genesis 6 it was 200 of the watchers. In this generation, we have reports where Satan is actually involved now. So it's he's pulled out all the stops, and I believe that's where we are in history. And you know, I would just say this, Donnie. You know, it really doesn't matter to me what people believe. You know, if they believe this is real or not. What people have to do, they have to decide whether when they're going to read your book, and they're going to say, okay, have you done your homework? And when Jesus talked about the days of Noah returning, what are those days? They were marrying and giving in marriage. Yeah, when you go back to Genesis 6:2, who was marrying? And only Noah plus seven were saved. So what about the rest of them that were marrying and giving in marriage? They were wiped out because of the contamination of that whole hybrid project. So, you know, when people talk about, you know, Matthew 24, there's nothing in the passage that says it has anything to do with hybrids. Well, why would Jesus select the generation or the antediluvian civilization, the days of Noah, as that which would characterize the return of the Son of Man? Why didn't he connect it with some other generation? So I think when people are listening to this, it sounds like X-Files. It sounds like science fiction. But if you go back and read what happened in Genesis 6, is that science fiction? It really happened. So what's the difference with the last generation? The last generation is, it's not about giants. It's about creating a replication of mankind that is the quintessential. He's not going to have six fingers. He's not going to be 10 feet tall. He's going to look like the creme de la creme of humanity. The you know, the Nordic blue-eyed, blonde hair, you know, a super intelligent, beautiful human being. In fact, I remember talking with one girl who's not here now. She referred to the people that she was associated with, she referred to them as the champions or the beautiful people. You have any other comments?
Now that's very interesting. And there's just so many questions. I don't even know where to start at. let's back up here. go ahead, Dorlin. I'll let you go ahead and jump
okay.
in.
All right. I've listened, Doug and ladies, Sally and Connie, I've listened to at least the interviews, the five, section of five that you did on the Bite Show. And I was wondering, did they set up your like conception then so that all of you would have twins? Because I know that some of you talked about the baby, the first, you know, child, and then remembering the next one and the different names. One had like Nimrod, Apollyon, Alexander, but also had a Paul, Michael, Alexander, or something like that. So did you each have twin boys?
Well, I did with the first set. The rest of them were not necessarily twins. They were single births.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And for me, no, I just had one, and I believe because he was an actual perfect specimen that I don't think they wanted to contaminate anything beyond that, but they did harvest my eggs after that to do more experimentation, because I think they were actually looking for a greater project, which we now see today that non-bloodline ladies are giving birth to Nephilim, and that was their ultimate goal.
Okay, all right. Progeny, more and more. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So, like with me, there were the 13 sons. The first two were twins. And they purposefully did that because I wasn't supposed to know about the firstborn, which was Nimrod. I was only supposed to know about Phil Michael Alexander George, the secondborn, so for a long time I thought he was the only one. And so they kept the firstborn hidden from me for all these years, and I'm 61 now. And then the other 13, I mean, like, the total of 13 was to lay the foundation for the 13 bloodlines, like, to be represented in one person, and that kind of, like, as a template for the bringing in of, like, the Antichrist and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So were you considered a mother goddess then?
It's not so much mother goddess. In their circles, they're referred to as Grand Dame.
Oh, Grand Dame. Okay, Grand Dame. All right, I got you. Okay.
You know, like Mother of Darkness. They have various ways in which to see it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
They wouldn't call it that, but, I mean, that's some of the parlance or some of the nomenclature that is used.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, please. I was going to say, you mentioned the principalities. How did you know that these were principalities, and how were you introduced to them?
You just know. I mean, you know they're not human. Although they want you to, there's a time where you can be tricked into believing they're human beings. But principalities and powers, when you meet them face to face, you know their principalities and powers, and
they're different than
there's like
than
a
demons.
Force. Yeah, there's like a tremendous force that they carry, and the demons are actually in submission to the principalities and powers.
Now, yeah, I think that's important, Dante, what you just said. In Jewish demonology, they view that the demons are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim. Whereas fallen angels or principalities and powers are of a different rank. I believe the same thing too. Through the years that I've worked with it, I know the difference between a demonic manifestation and when you're dealing with a principality. A principality doesn't need a human body. They have their own bodies. But demons, they seek bodies. They seek bodies because they once had a body as a disembodied spirit of an Nephilim. So a principality has a very intense presence, very intelligent. It can all often come off, and when I've met them in people, they come off almost very human, very intelligent, very cold. Whereas a demon, you can't even have any kind of a normal conversation with them. I don't talk to them. I just get rid of them. I can't stand the presence of them. But they're just very filthy, and they're just very arrogant, so I just get them out of the way. But when you're dealing with a principality, they're deeper. They're more embedded in a person's DID system. When I say DID, I'm talking about the fragmentation that occurs through trauma. The layering in of the principalities are much deeper and more closely attached to the human spirit. Whereas the demons are more associated with the body, they're more on the outer area, outer realm of the person's DID structure. And the only way to conceive this is just think of one individual as a kingdom with a multi-layered platform of carrying principalities and powers with demons as the outer shield. I'll never forget, I met a woman a number of years ago, and now looking back I know who she was. She's a very highly placed person in the Illuminati, and I met her a number of years ago. I was in the airport and I took a picture of her, and it was just a film camera, and in the airport it was just a wall in the background, and he was there with another person who was a pastor I didn't know at the time, but he was also cult involved. But I took this picture, and I took two pictures, one of her and then one with me alongside of her. And the most amazing thing showed up in the film. When it was just her, there was this huge red multi-layered disc over her head. It was layered, you could say it looked like a UFO, but, you know, kind of in shape. It was a layered disc. And then when I stood behind her and my wife took the picture, that thing left because I was next to her, and it went over and stood vertical by the pastor. And so I showed her that, and she says, oh, yes, and she was so proud of it. She says, that's the crown of Semiramis. And it was just a massive horde of principalities, you know, structured into her personality. And she was, you know, and so it's hard for the average listener to understand this. And, you know, we don't make something more of the devil than he is. But you know what the problem is with the church? The church is so dumbed down to what is really, what we're really facing, is that we don't even know from the scripture who the adversary is. There should, every church should teach a course on Satanology, not at the exclusion of theology or Christology or the doctrine of Christ and his deity and who he is as our Savior. That obviously should be in our foundation. But if we don't teach the God's people the biblical revelation and that which defines who our enemy is, then God's people are at risk. And the church in the West is in tremendous risk. It's so dumbed down that you can't even talk about these kinds of things in churches because they think you're putting too much emphasis on the devil.
It might be good, too, right here to talk a little bit about the difference of demons versus principalities and powers when doing the work. You know, like the demons leave, you can command them out, whereas principalities and powers are displaced.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I didn't know this, but I mean, I've been working with multiple personality disorder, which comes with the trauma associated with this kind of programming. I've been doing this for 25 years and about 20 years with MPD, which is now called dissociative identity disorder. But I have learned through the years that you know, you can expel demons, but when it comes to principalities and powers who are structured into a person's DID system, the only way that they can be removed is that the person has to displace them. It's just no different than in the land of Canaan. You know, they just didn't stand there and shout at the enemy and command them off the land. You know, they had to put their foot down and they had to, and they engaged them, they had to displace them. And so the principle is like this, it goes like this, that for the children of Israel to inherit the land, they had to dispossess their enemies. In the Hebrew, the word inherit and dispossess is related. So in order for them to inherit the land, they had to disinherit the enemy. That's translated into the English, dispossess. So it's no different in principle with when you're working with people with this history, that you have to help facilitate and help direct them in the process of reclaiming their humanity that has been hijacked or kidnapped by the adversary. In order for them to reclaim their lives back so that Jesus Christ himself can occupy these strongholds and come into a place of ascendancy in their life, is that they themselves have to displace those principalities. With demons, you can cast them out. With a principality, they have to be displaced. Did I represent that correctly?
Yeah, because the principalities and powers are usually filling a space that they've displaced some of the God-given humanity identity of that person. And so as you get that identity, that person, that humanity back, then the space that's been filled in by that principality or power has to leave, because the humanity comes back and pushes them out.
Actually the person, the counselee, has the authority to do that.
Yeah.
And that's regaining back all that the enemy has stolen.
But it's in cooperation. In other words, at this level, we're working together, and you're making a choice to reclaim that which was taken from you during the trauma. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and often you don't recognize it at first as being a principality in power. You just think of it as being yourself, you know, and you may even have the name of a principality in power that you see as being you. I am, you know, Beelzebub. I am Nimrod. I am Apollyon. And so, well, you know, when you go in there and begin to displace, well, at first it feels like it's just demonic, you know. So then you just think, oh, well, I got to cast it out. It doesn't leave. And so then as you begin to deal with it, you realize, oh, I'm not Apollyon. I am Constantina. And so as Constantina gets to be here, me as Constantina can come in and fill in that space, and it dislodges the principality and power, and then he has to leave.
And when she's talking about these different names, often when a person's when they're divided, they have various parts. If you've ever seen the movie Sybil, you know that girl was abused by her mother, and she had different parts of her personality that was fragmented, that had different names. Well, you just take the movie Sybil and you multiply that about 1,000 times with ritual abuse, and instead of having these different names that Sybil had that were part of her functioning in terms of her abuse and part of her identity fragmentation, these girls will have parts that are split off, and during the rituals someone like Dr. Mengele would channel in spirits during the trauma, or in the, when a person's being split, they would be tortured, and then they have to call on a particular spirit. When they call on that spirit, it comes in, then that split and that person can take on the identity of the principality.
Yeah.
You are Beelzebub, or you are now Satan. So
yeah.
During the splitting process, the person's DID system can be so mirrored of the powers of darkness, it takes, you know, someone that is familiar with this to help them sort it out so they can get their humanity back.
Now, this is very interesting, because one of the things that come to mind as you're talking about this is a situation that happened with Jesus and the disciples when they went to cast out some of the demons, and they came back and said certain ones would not respond to the regular form of exorcism or casting them out. And he said these kind come out only through prayer and fasting. Do you think Jesus may have been hinting at something like what you're talking about right now?
You know, I don't know, because when you look at the Gospels, Dante, the biggest challenge that Jesus met was the Gadarene demoniac, if you remember. And in Jesus, if you look in the Greek, it says that he was commanding the spirit to come out. And it's in the imperfect tense in the Greek. I mean, he was commanding. And he noticed that the spirit wasn't leaving. So Jesus, operating in his humanity, not out of his deity, but out of his humanity, he saw that the demon wasn't leaving. So what did he say? What is your name? Okay? And so he says, my name is Legion, for we are many. Oh, so now he's got the picture. My name is Legion, for we are many. So at that time, a typical Roman legion would be about 6,000. Okay? So if Jesus, in this encounter, let's say there was 6,000 demons there, I'm not being disrespectful, okay? I'm just saying that we live at a different time. If that was the maximum level of infestation and invasion of the enemy, it's far worse now, Dante and Dora. I mean, and I've told people in the past, and the Lord Jesus says, you'll do greater works than these because I go to the Father, okay? If I wish I could just have a person who had a legion, because it could be dealt with in one day and their problems would be over and they could be on their way. This level of infestation, it's taken years. And, of course, we've learned more now so that we can cut the time down much more effectively. But the infestation and the layering and the level of structuring is completely off the scale.
Well, because I think you need to factor in that you're not dealing with just the demonic. You're not just dealing with principalities and powers. You're dealing with fragmented humanity, the person themselves. And so it's not just about casting something out. I mean, you have to, you know what I'm trying to say? Where they layer upon layer upon layer of the humanity wrapped in principalities and powers. So you're also dealing with a human being. And that's a sanctification process, that's learning how to do spiritual warfare. I mean, there's help me out here. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I used this illustration before, Dante, when I presented this at seminars and things like that, is that you hear Sally sitting here and Constantina here. When I met her, let's say, well, Sally in the mid-80s, I had no idea this was there, you know, and we started going into this, and we were very slow at learning, and I met Connie in 97, And she was switching so rapidly that she couldn't even stay present in any one part of herself when I first met her. And so the way to conceptualize this, it perhaps would be with some of these folks in terms of layers, just think about, I don't want to scare people too much, but let's say you have a 100-story building. And each floor has a number of rooms, okay? So each floor would have people on it, right? And those people have a particular function, and the top floor would be the presenter world. Well, there is a floor below that, and the people on the top floor don't even know there's a floor below them. And so on down you go with each layer. The layer above does not know about the layer below, and the fragmented aspects of a person's identity is structured like a multi-tiered construct with the deepest and the most highest ranking principalities at the bottom. Okay? And in order, in actually each one of these floors can be structured in such a way within a person's DID structure so that they are a weapons platform, so they can come into a local church and on their conscious level they don't even may not even know that they have this history, and yet these different levels are energized and there can be all kinds of spiritual activity being released into a congregation or into government wherever they are without the person even knowing that they're being used at. That is, if they don't know about their history. Because chronic trauma, the chief characteristic feature, or what is referred to pathognomonic, the chief characteristic feature of chronic trauma is amnesia. So these programmers understand this. They understand this. They have protocols. Dr. Mengele knew this. He perfected trauma-based mind control. There are a number of people who have followed him. PJ, there's others. I won't mention their names now because they're still alive. But these Nazi-type doctors, they're also sorcerers, and they're hired by the royal family, these royal families, to do the structuring so that Satan gets what he wants. He wants these offspring, and in exchange they get power, they get wealth, they get they get the kingdoms of this world, as Jesus offered, as Satan offered Jesus in the temptation.
All right, and that was a very good analogy with the 100-story building. Now I kind of want to talk about the birth of the Nephilim and the question that I know everybody tuned in for, and the question that has been on the people's mind for a long time. When we talk about the birth of these hybrid children, are we talking genetic manipulation, or are we talking physical and sexual contact between humans and supernatural entities?
Yeah, it's the latter. It is contact with a supernatural entity. It's a conception with a principality.
And when it comes to trauma, how would you rate the conception in terms of, I mean, that's a good question, because some of these people, what do you mean you had sex with a fallen angel? This is more like a most horrific rape that a person could ever experience. Maybe you could...
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it sex. It is, it's like an entire being completely engulfed. And it's not even a, human rape is very traumatic, but be raped by principalities goes off the scale so much that it actually causes extreme shattering of the person and that's what Satan has wanted it. So that the person's, it's like their spirit, soul, obviously their body doesn't shatter, but if the grace of God, if I didn't have the life of the Lord Jesus Christ living within me at that time, I don't believe I would have survived. I probably would have died because of the extreme traumatization. Because our bodies are not... designed to, it's quite interesting because if you think about it, our bodies are designed to contain the all of God, which is Jesus Christ. But it's not designed to contain a principality, which is another creature, which is a creature that has denied the glory of God. And so with that, it is an extreme violation of the worst kind of humanity that these angels have left their abode. They have left their boundary, that God created a boundary. They have left that and violated the image of God, which is human beings, in order to have their race and in order to have what they want. And it goes along with the five I wills. I will obtain. I will do this. I will do that. And so it's really through this violation of the mankind, of a person, that Satan has ultimately obtaining his I wills.
Yeah, and I think whatever it means for an entity to be the opposite of the life of God in a place of maximum spiritual death, Satan has existence, he has being, but he has no life. He is the complete absence of life. Satan is not a living being. He has being, but it's not life. It's nothing but death. And so when this occurs, the person is engulfed, if you will, in spiritual death. And it's horrific. How would you, maybe you could comment on it, Connie.
I concur with what Sally said. It's still really hard for me to talk about this right now. So
yeah. And I think that's validating. And not that you'd have to go into detail, but I think it's important for just as briefly and succinctly as you can, is there's a reason why it's difficult, Connie?
It's the ultimate invasion of your spirit, soul, and body. I mean, it's I don't know if I'll ever be the same. I mean, I do all the work and everything. I don't know if I'll ever be okay, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I think what, you know, I remember Warren Brandt, when we saw him after 14 years in a Romanian prison as a Christian, he suffered PTSD for the rest of his life, but he had a radiant testimony.
Yeah.
He loved the Lord and he was used mightily of the Lord, but he did have he bore in his humanity the scars of the years of being in that Romanian prison. And for you to have the scars, Connie, and have the tears, she has tears right now, that's validating. I mean, if you were just sit here and can talk about it at business as usual, there would be something wrong. So I acknowledge that your tears are the artifact of just the very thing, Donnie, the question he asked, what was this event like?
Well, I guess, you know, the hard part is then, I mean, all of this happens, it's going on in your life, and then at the end of everything, they try to patch everything back together and send you back to your surrogate family, and you go back to trying to live life, and things keep popping, kind of bleeding through, you know, affecting your life, and you try to talk to somebody about it, there's no place for it to go, you know. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, what church what do you do, Donnie? You just go tell your pastor that you know, you've been violated in this way and you have this history? I mean, it's like they've been programmed and told all their life that if you ever talk about this, people think you're crazy, and you will never be believed. So they have been conditioned to never talk about it because no one would ever believe that such an event could ever even occur.
Yeah, and Doug, and I'm with you on that 100%. And I mean, part of the reason that I wanted to do this interview goes along those same lines. There are people out there right now saying that, you know, none of this is real, it's all a delusion. And the question I have for the ladies, what do you say to those people out there that thinks, you know, this is just a delusion or an illusion and it didn't really happen? What do you tell those people?
Well, it'd be awfully handy if it was a delusion. You know, it'd be nice to just be able to wipe it all away that way, but it's not that easy, and it's simply not the truth. I know what I lived. I know what I experienced. I know the effect it has on my life today, you know, all these years later, still has the power to, you know, affect my life in everyday life, just going to the doctor or, you know, trying to plan a meal or, you know, it's like I know what I lived.
Sally, I would ask you, because she's had a little more time to have resolution, Connie's
yeah.
been, you know, she's made great progress, but for you,
yeah.
Sally, how would you, when it comes to someone say, well, you know, I know you believe this, Sally, I know you really believe this happened, but you have all kinds of things that happen in the cult. You were present when there was the planning of the killing of President Kennedy. You're in on those meetings. How do you know you were there? You were there when the president that took his place was also a part of that planning. You've been in different places all over the world. So how are those memories that have to do with your whole occult history, how is that any different than being, you know, violated by a principality? You know, when I think about this, why would this one aspect of your whole history of ritual abuse, why would this one aspect be visionary or just an hallucination when all the rest of it has solid history with corroborative testimony of others that you've been with in various rituals on a large scale? So how do you know that this specific aspect of your history, where there's been a violation of a fallen angel, that this aspect isn't just visionary, something that you believe happened to you but really didn't?
Well, I'm kind of the all or none, so it's either all true or none of it's true. So if somebody, you believe part of it, then none of it. But we have faced situations, Donnie, where there have been groups of churches that have just flat said that we were delusional and didn't believe. We've heard this quite often, I think, really in the past 20 years. Usually I look at the person and, you know, there's scriptures that talks about if you see a log in your brother's eye, first remove the speck from your own. I really believe that the ones that are the most vociferous are the ones that they've got something to hide. So I will look at them and say, what is in your life that is hidden in the darkness? Because the ones that really rise up and that persecute, or that ones that say that this you're delusional or this can't be, that either there's something in their lives that they're trying to hide, or their perspective of God is very small and do not understand God's eternal purpose. If you understood what God's purpose is, then people who I have come across who maybe not understand any of this at all, don't have a framework, and I can definitely have compassion on anybody that doesn't have a framework for this, because it definitely is, you know, you've got to have a category for it, you've got to have education. But people who have taken up their cross daily, who have lived according to the spirit and not according to the flesh, I have never had any problems or issues. But when there's people that are trying to nitpick, or religious people, I think.
What about people just want evidence? Where's the evidence?
Where's the evidence?
Yeah, they're intellectual. They have an intellectual difficulty of grasping this. They may even accept the Genesis 6,
mm-hmm.
but where's the evidence that this Genesis 6 is happening today? Where is the evidence?
I'd say wait and see.
Okay.
It's going to happen.
Well, the question is, do you fit the category of a biblical witness? Are you a witness to these events?
I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And see, that's the key. You know, let everything be established on the basis of two or three witnesses. We have witnesses of a number of people, Dante, that were in the planning stages of the assassination of President Kennedy, of world events who have been with the powering up. We're going to do a whole special in a week on the satanic rituals that powered up the North Korean regime. All these people have interfaced with Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, and even more recently with the installment of Kim Jong-un, the North Korean regime. These totalitarian regimes have concentration camps in North Korea that are 20 miles long. I mean, massive structures with up to a million in some of them, and they're there as political prisoners. Those that believe in heaven are considered a threat to the nation. How did such a dark regime come to power? We're going to talk about that in about a couple weeks. People have no idea that what we're dealing with is the kings of the earth that will take their stand against the Lord and His anointed. Who are these kings today, and where did they get their power? Well, it comes through this kind of phenomenon we're talking about here. They got their power because they were willing to turn their daughters over to Satan in order for Satan to get what he wanted, and that is to create an end-time hybrid army to defeat God. Think about this, Dante. When the adversary fell, we know from Revelation chapter 12 that only one-third followed him. We know that. So that leaves two-thirds of the elect angels, the angels that serve God, that outnumber the one-third that followed Satan. What kind of strategy is Satan going to come up with, Donnie and Dory, in order to make up his ranks? He's got a very excellent strategy, and he is able to multiply numerically through the hybrid program and other assets that he has, so that when the final Armageddon campaign occurs, he will have maxed out every kind of strategy, every kind of invention that he can come up with to defeat God, so that when God completely overthrows him, it's final. There's no other replay. The game is over.
All right, Doug, and I want to make something clear. I kind of want to get a clearer answer for those out there who are still wondering. This encounter, this rape that she described by the principalities, or this fallen angelic entity, were there actual hybrid offspring conceived from this encounter? People in our chat room want to know.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and that's really what I wanted to get at, because some people, again, we talked about the people that doubt and the people that do not think that hybrids are being born. Do either of you happen to know maybe even an estimate of how many hybrids there are among us, and if so, where are they?
What are your thoughts?
Thousands upon thousands upon thousands.
Where do you think they might be?
A lot of them are like sequestered in the second heavens.
And haven't you also talked about in some of these underground bases?
Oh yeah, they've definitely got a lot of them down there.
Connie's talked about military bases, and I think you've talked about underground bases. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's mountains, there's underground mountains, there's underground bases, there's places in Russia that are underground for breeding programs alone, and there's taken into rooms where there was just, I can't even describe how massive it was, a place in Russia, and it was just huge, and all it was just breeding programs.
And there's some of them that are right here on Earth amongst us. I said that all along. I said that, you know, like in key positions, they're already here.
Yeah.
They're just not revealed yet.
And we've also had some hypothesis. I've spoke with one fella who believed that there's some of the superheroes that we see were Nephilim, like the football heroes, but I don't know whether that's true or not.
No, they're definitely here.
Right.
They're not just all in the underground bunkers. They're not all, some of them sequestered in the second heaven. There's a bunch of them right here on Earth. They just aren't revealed yet. Their disclosure isn't here.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's really important because, you know, just to follow up on that, I was talking with Dan the other day, and, you know, Stan Dale talked about when the craft, what they call UFOs, as they were actually, I mean, they're hardware. I mean, we have the fallen angels masquerading as UFOs. I mean, that's a real phenomenon. They're like glowing orbs. But there's the actual physical hardware. These people have been all over the world in these craft, and it's physical. I mean, they've been there and back, okay, with the heads of state. So you have this craft. Well, this technology was given to, you know, Nazi Germany, and then it was competition in the United States, and in order for them to be ahead, get ahead in terms of military advantage. So the principalities and powers share this technology, just like the days of Noah. But according to Stan Dale, in the mid-70s, the level of hybrid infiltration had taken over the projects. So think about it. What are these so-called UFOs for? The hybrids have physicality. They need craft. And they have them. Michael Schrat has good documentation on this. Joseph Farrell, and Farrell, and his Roswell and the Reich has documented the science, the physical science of these terrestrial based craft, and so that has been commandeered by the hybrids as of the mid 70s. But here's the real kicker: somewhere in the 80s. Those that were once the top 13 ruling heads of the oligarchy of plutocrats, or the Illuminists, the Council of 13, sometimes it's called, that they were the innermost circle of, you know, the Council of 300, Club of Rome, Bilderberg, whatever you want to call it. You have a top, that innermost circle of top bloodlines. They're now in the outer circle. The hybrids are now occupying that place, according to the reports that we have, and that those that were once in a place of high position, you know, of kings of the earth, are now subject to hybrids. This is the report I'm getting. Is this true, Connie?
Yes.
Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
and this is just all this means. It says to me, Dante, is this is far later than we think. I mean, we're not in the end days. We're at the end of the end days. We're right at the edge of that which is described in the Gospels of the return of the Son of Man. And myself, I believe the church is going to be taken out before the Great Tribulation, but the church is going to face a final confrontation with the powers of darkness, and I believe we're going to be facing persecution right here in the West real soon. And the plans are already there.
I agree with you 100% on that, Doug. I think we will face something because, thankfully, we've been spared from much of what's going on. I mean, in Iran now they're starting to round up Christians.
Yes.
In Africa they've been killing Christians for a very long time. And let me ask this question, since you brought up the prospect of confrontation. These modern-day Nephilim, we know the ones in Genesis 6, that when they died, they became demonic spirits. Is that the same thing going on today when these modern-day Nephilim die? Do they also become demonic spirits like the originals pre-flood?
I don't know. I can't answer that. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because some of them have been reported to be sacrificed in order to, their belief is that when they're sacrificed, their spirits are released and they go into a higher level of being. So I think what happens is the spirit is transferred to a more perfected species that they're seeking to attain. So I believe it's a transfer of spirits. I don't think they become disembodied. They go, the reports that I have is that if there's a Nephilim sacrificed, that spirit of that Nephilim goes into the Antichrist himself. So he's if there's a sacrifice of Nephilim, then with the release of that spirit of that entity, it goes directly into the Antichrist himself or the false prophet. This is the reports that I've been getting.
And let me ask one more question before we continue, and I find this to be a very interesting question. Have you ever heard of, or do the women know of, any female Nephilim that have been born?
I'm not aware of any.
I'm not either, but I have heard reports of it.
All the women, and my take on that, in terms of first generation, I mean, there are those talks about second generation, third generation. I that is the case in terms of, that's a whole other subject, but I think the primary goal is this first generation. All that I've ever heard, and those that I've worked with, and talked with those others that have worked with this and report this, or others besides myself, counselors, that they are male entities.
Yeah, and that's what I found through all the studying and all the listening I've been doing. I've never personally heard of any female entities. Dory Lynn, do you have any questions before we continue?
I did, and then I get to, and then Doug gives more information, and then I get five more questions, and then I just go, whoa. I will concur with you too, Dante. The reading and studying that I did for 20 some years into this subject matter, and being a recovering, I'm going to call myself a recovering pagan witch, I don't have a bloodline, so I was one of the mundane, but I studied this for years, and this is like pretty much everything that I ever read that was going on. The thing that I always had trouble wrapping my brain around was the ritual that occurred on Mount Hermon, the conception ritual, and how that actually produced a, flesh and blood. But now that you talked about the technology and the advanced technology, and that it's actually a principality that's coming and doing the, conceiving, it all made like a lot of sense, like a bunch of light bulbs went off. So that, I would have to concur that that's with everything I read. I've had, just stuff in my past and that I'm working through also. I'm an abductee and a contactee right from my crib, and I had some terrible sexual encounters with some beings and things like that, and missing time and all that. And what I found was, especially your last two addendums on the Bite Show, I can't remember which girl it was, but one of the Nephilim mothers had said that by working through this and facing all this, and it's not easy to face, it's kind of like when you are having to face child molestation, sexual molestation issues, it's not pretty, it's ugly, and it's hard work, but you have to face it. Mm-hmm. And you've got, you have to heal. And
right.
So she was talking about having to, get to this point that, rebuking and repenting and which we do and I've done, and but it just, it's like, be gone, or like you talked about the demons, you can cast them out because they're lower level. But when you've got some deep, things that have gone on or that have gone on since you were a child, it's just not that easy to dismiss, and it's hard work. And the gal said, so by working through this, she felt that she was receiving her full measure of Christ. And I don't know which girl said that, but that really struck a chord in me when I listened to that. So, like I said, I'm still working through some things, So this has been very interesting for me, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight, Dante, with you guys. I really do. And keeping you ladies in prayer, and Doug too, for sure, you know, because it's going to get worse.
Yeah, but you know, God's final move will, in this generation, with as it relates to the church, will be spectacular. Even though I believe it'll only be a remnant, people like yourself who have a history of trauma. You know, here's the thing that the church is so ignorant of. I talked with Dr. Jerry Mangazzi here a while back, who teaches a course in traumatology there in Dallas. He's been working with dissociative identity disorders for over almost 30 years now. He's been involved with forensics, and I mean, he's a professional. He got his PhD in counselor education. He's well known in his field. And I talked with Jerry. I've known him for years and gone to his conferences. But I talked with Jerry about why is the church so ignorant of trauma? In other words, if you have a person who has a history of trauma, they're dissociated. You know, the abduction phenomena, when I hear the reports of abduction phenomena, I hear that, it sounds everything like people who have dissociative experiences and had trauma in their life, okay? The framework may be somewhat different. These people here don't have alien abduction and that in their background, but they have trauma. Now, the point I want to make is that when you have chronic trauma in early childhood, there's symptoms to trauma. And there's amnesia, there's flashbacks, there's nightmares that are very intense. There's all kinds of symptoms. If a biblical counselor is not trained in traumatology, then he will be very limited in his help. You cannot pray away symptoms of trauma. If someone goes out and breaks their leg, you don't pray away the symptoms of a broken leg. It's no different when a person emotionally and even spiritually goes through chronic trauma in early childhood. You don't just pray away the trauma. You have to excavate it, and that person has to go into that area, which is walled off through amnesia, and reclaim their life so that it can heal. You brought that up, Dora, is that if there's going to be healing, you have to know what you're healed from.
Exactly. Yes.
So, and that means you own your life, yeah. And that redemption comes in there. And the worst that the adversary can do when I'm working with people is that we call upon the Lord to manifest, where were you in this event? And when this is properly done and properly excavated, the Lord always shows himself that he was there. They didn't know it. But when the person sees in the deepest trauma, including the most horrific trauma in their life, and that is the conception of a hybrid, that trauma is off the scale. It is completely fragmented. The person's identity fragments into thousands of parts, if you will. And when if God can heal a person like that, then people that have average problems, whatever that means, there's hope for them too.
Right. Exactly. Amen, Doug. That's right.
Do you have any thoughts?
Thank you,
Dory, for sharing. I really appreciate your testimony, and that endears you closer to my heart, and we'll definitely keep you in prayer too, because it is an overcoming, and I think that's why God has allowed this into our lives. It is for his glory ultimately, but to demonstrate to the principalities, demonstrate, it's in Ephesians talks about to give a testimony to the angelic host.
You're referring to Ephesians 3:10.
Ephesians 3:10,
yeah,
thank you. That God is worthy. So everything that happened to you, Dory, everything that happened to Constantine and myself, we're demonstrating that God is worthy. And so, you know, Dante, your question about how can the Nephilim, you know, must be delusional. Well, if people believe the other, then the Nephilim itself really is the most hidden stronghold. It's what we would call the Jebusite stronghold that is in the church today. And is intentionally kept hidden. There is a light covering over it, or actually a Laodicean spirit. And so I think we're dealing more than just an intellectual skepticism. We're actually dealing with a spiritual veil that is over the
right.
And that's Isaiah 25:7, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, that and only through prayer and fasting, pick up what you had mentioned, Dante, but I think, you know, I have wondered that too when the Lord had said, oh, this kind can only come out with prayer and fasting. And I have prayed and prayed and prayed about that because I always thought, boy, I've got that kind. Whatever he's referring to. I've got it. And so it's only going to come out through prayer and through fasting. So, which means then it's only going to be through prayer, only through God, and it is through. It's also a characterological thing. One thing I was so impressed with, Johnny said that she would much rather have spent her life in her wheelchair and to know God than to be walking and to not know God the way that she does.
And she's a quadriplegic, you know.
Yeah, and I would say the same thing. I'd much rather have this happen to me and to know God in the way that I know him now. If there were any other way, great, but I don't know. It is through suffering. And it is
yep.
through suffering that we tend to come closer to our Lord. And the Adamic nature seems like it becomes less and less than our need. We're thrust upon our Lord in no other way except through the suffering and through a crippling that you think, okay, well, why did God allow this? Well, there was a crippling at conception. Well, we never had a chance, but yet to his glory that Constantina and I are sitting here, even in the same room, to be able to glorify our Lord Jesus together. And we would have probably have been bitter enemies apart from him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's nodding.
Right.
and something you guys said, it really is interesting. You talk about coming out of this, and you talk about Jesus Christ. Can you give us a testimony of how you came out of the breeding program and got to know Christ?
Well, I actually knew him from very, 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 very young, and I think that God allowed that. I, as a very, very small child, I could honestly see that Satan at that time, you know, my family was trying to, they were calling him Lucifer, that he was a creature, and that I knew that there was someone beyond him. And so my heart was turned towards wanting to know the one and true God from as a very, very, very small child. And so that is how, through the years, then I can see how the Lord has really kept me. In fact, I believe that if he had not indwelt me during those times, then I would have been dead. And that he really took a majority of the suffering.
Now, let me just, okay, there was that one of, you now know this, that there was an awareness of God at a very early age, and the coming of the Lord is just a supernatural intervention. But you didn't know this in your conscious life before you got in touch with your past that was dissociated.
Mm-hmm.
You basically came, in your mind, you came to the Lord at 25. Now you know that you really came back to him. So there was a time in which you were living a life, you didn't know any of this was in your background, and you came to seek the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the process like coming from where in your conscious state to seeking the Lord and then maybe becoming aware that you have something in this history? Do you think that would be something you're thinking about, Dante? Or because it's kind of complicated. They don't even know that they had an encounter with the Lord as little children because they couldn't have survived without him. And they have an event later on in life where they consciously come to the Lord. And then as they... recover their life and, you know, and go through this process, then they see they had that the Lord was there in their life very early, but they didn't know that. But they had as an adult, they had a time when they started seeking the Lord and then became aware that they have some severe problems they have to face.
Yeah, and that's more of what I was getting at. I could have phrased it a little bit different, I guess. What led to the conscious decision to finally seek Christ and really, I guess you say, come to Him as your Lord and Savior, what event led up to you realizing that you needed Christ's help to be free from what was going on?
Well, at age 25, I came back to Him, and I always kind of sensed at that point that my destiny, I was so filled with hatred. But at age 25, a coworker told me that God left me and that I was so hungry and starved for love that I needed desperately to have and to know this God who loved me. And so at that point, I didn't care what I had to do, what I had to know, what I had to go through. I had to be with this God who loved me and to know Him, and I was willing to give up everything. And so at that point I did, and I was miserable my entire life, and at 25 things desperately got worse. I had eating disorders. It came out of drug history also at and so to turn that around or to try to be a Christian was very, very difficult because I certainly could not be a Christian no matter how hard I tried, which is good because it's only Christ. But even outwardly, I knew I was so messed up, and I figured that if anybody really knew me, they would think I was the most crazy, the most insane person that they'd ever met in their entire life. So I tried to spend my life being as quiet as possible, not let people know me, because then they knew I would. They, once I started talking, they knew they. I was afraid that they would know I was crazy, and so it really just sitting under Doug's instruction, his thorough instruction in the Word, just tremendous immersion of the Word of God. That alone, I felt just a true cleansing, where my mind was starting to straighten out a bit. But I also knew when I came back at 25, I was singing praises to the Lord. I knew He loved me. But then there was that still quiet voice that said, yes, but you don't know what you're delivered from. And so I said, okay, Lord, I'm willing to find out what it is, and I trust You. And so He took me on this journey. He had to prepare Doug and Lori, of course. They had to be ready, and that took a while. And that
she was way ahead of us. It took us longer to get ready.
And so then I had to be ready, though, too. And early on, I believe that I had given birth to a Nephilim, the Nephilim entity, and I began to talk about the breeding programs and what Satan's plan
was. This is back in the early 90s.
Yeah, and Doug didn't have a place for it at that time. Now things are coming out more with the women as to what that is. But I don't. Does that answer your question, Dante?
Definitely answered my question, and I wanted to get that out there for everybody.
Yeah, and I think Connie, too. I think Connie would, you heard Sally kind of track with what Donnie asked. How would you bring in, where you are today and the direction you're going with the Lord?
Well, starting back when I was like around 2, because they used the scripture in the programming, I would hear scripture read, and at some point Christ was presented to me, and I was drawn to this Christ because I heard how He would take little children on His knee and He would love them and bless them. So even though I was very young, my heart did respond, but I didn't know that outwardly in my personal life I was in this Mennonite home, which was very religious, so and I went to a Christian school, so I, you know, memorized scriptures and all that. And I remember when I was around 12 or 13, my friend decided she was going to be baptized and asking me if I wanted to be baptized. And I said, well, I don't really know. I mean, because I had kind of gone through a form thing of becoming a Christian. That was kind of the accepted thing to do at that age. And I wanted it to be real. I wanted it to, you know, feel real to me, but it always felt real fake to me. Like, I just could never really sense God's presence with me. And then when I was about 20, I remember just journaling. I was married and I had my first child, and I remember journaling and just saying, I want to know you, God. I want to know you as you can be known, and yet I feel like I know about you, but I don't really know you. So that began a journey. I mean, I didn't know it at the time that he heard my cry, and yet I wasn't aware he was answering. I went through another 20 years probably, and the main thing I struggled with was like depression, a lot of depression and kind of suicidal thoughts, and I thought, oh, I'll never act on those suicidal thoughts, you know. And but at some point I did. In 1994 I attempted suicide outwardly, not in some dissociated part of me like in the cult where they quickly covered it over and healed, you know, got me back home where I was fine, but outwardly I attempted suicide, which was very out of character for a Mennonite person. There didn't appear to be any reason why I should be doing what I was doing. And I was hospitalized, I was on medications, and I kept saying, God, I know there's something very, very wrong. And I remember one of my brothers asking me, do you think, like, if you guys would quit moving all over the country and you had some money, maybe your problems would get taken care of? And it was like my light bulb moment, you know, my Damascus Road experience where the Lord showed me that, no, this is not something that little earthly things is going to fix. There's something very deeply, very wrong inside of me. And through the suicide attempt, interestingly enough, I mean, I shouldn't be alive. We were 75 miles from a hospital. They had to airlift me out, but the Lord kept me alive. And through that experience, that was the turning point for me, because I said, that's reality. I can go out there and I can shop, I can garden, I can raise my four daughters, but there's something seriously wrong inside. Now, I was still a Christian, I was still seeking the Lord, I still desired this relationship with Him. And so for me, I didn't go out and sow my wild oats, you know, and I lived a very sequestered life where it was very isolated within the Mennonite community, and we didn't drink, we didn't dance, we didn't smoke, and, you know, we wore the long dresses and the white caps and so forth. But I was in religious bondage, and it was a huge stronghold that they used to keep me locked within the cult system. And so the Lord just had to begin a process of taking me out of there. And He did it step by step. He's still in the process of doing that, because I've had such religious bondage, you know, to rules mm-hmm. and regulations and just things like when I was in counseling and I took my head covering off, because they used the head covering in the cult, you know, and did a lot of programming around it. So I believed that if I didn't wear it, God couldn't hear my prayers, so I was scared to take it off, and yet it was a submission to what they wanted me to do. So, I mean, that's kind of maybe all over the place.
No, that's good. And I think just because I think good. The time's coming down here, I would just say this, that while she had this surrogate life, Mennonite, she has an identical twin. They could switch it out, and it looks just like her, and she'd be hauled off to Europe for months on end, or to Tavistock Institute programming, taken all over the world and brought back, and everybody around her didn't see the bait and switch.
Even my husband and girls didn't. Now they know. There's things that make sense to my husband. There's things that make sense to my daughters. You know, when I said, did you know I have this twin sister that's an absolute double for me, and then they would, you know, do programming together with us so that we shared, like, spiritually we were connected. And so they said, oh, there's so much stuff that makes sense now that we know that. And so they were able to, my daughter actually saw her in Kalispell, Montana a few months ago. And she just about ran up to her and said, Mom. And then she's like, oh, no, Mom's in New York. I just talked to her, you know. So
I know you're getting close to the end of the hour here, but go ahead, Donnie.
Yeah, we are. We have about 3 minutes left. Doug, I want you to give your contact information out because I actually got a whole lot of questions. I didn't realize people were actually emailing me questions as well. We had more questions in the chat room that I didn't get a chance to ask. I had more questions myself, and I'm sure we could have gone on for another 2 hours or more. Can you give your contact information and really just some parting words for those people who may be experiencing some of the same things that may be listening?
Well, I just keep just calling out to the Lord and keep seeking Him. You know, Jesus said, I think Matthew 7, keep asking and you shall receive. Keep seeking, you shall find. Keep knocking, it shall be opened unto you. It's the seeking heart, and sometimes it doesn't seem like He's listening, but He is. Whosoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved, and that not only initially, but it's an ongoing thing. I purposely don't have a website, so the things that I have recorded are on the Byte Show. This was called the BYTE Show, and if you click on guests, you can go down to my name, Douglas Riggs, and there's my own webpage, and I've been working on a number of files, and of course in there is included, you know, the Nephilim things and some roundtables with people like Lynn Marzulli and Dr. Preston Bailey and Stan Dale, different people. I'll be doing a show tomorrow night on Isaiah 25:7 on the veil that's over all the nations in preparation for our North Korean roundtable. But on that, on the Byte Show, there's my email there if people that wish to contact me. And if it's too long, why, you know, I'm willing to take a phone call if I know that the person is really a genuine inquirer and not just somebody calling to raise trouble, you know. But I just want to thank you, Dante and Dory, and, you know, for this opportunity, because I know it is very controversial. But Jesus Christ is Lord. He is ruling and reigning. He is supreme. He knows that this is the last generation, and basically he is allowing Satan to pull out all the stops, so that when he's finally put down, there will be no further protest. He will not. There will be no appeal.
Yep.
Yeah, and I just want to thank you and the women for coming on. I definitely appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this interview for a very long time. So once again, thank you for taking the time and coming on tonight and answering a lot of questions that I know that were on people's minds tonight.
Yeah, we thank you too, Dante.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good night.
Thank you, Dory, for sitting in on this with us. This has been a very enlightening interview. For those of you out there who have not read the first issue of Omegazine, that is a new online magazine,